Andre, let's start with the SCO summit and right now with NATO summit. And it seems that as much as they have been ignoring what was going on at the SCO summit, is it's been reflected in the NATO summit. They are all everything that they're talking about is related to the SCO summit. How do you connect these two summits?
Well, it's very simple. Especially for Europeans, they could have been part, huge part of the greater Eurasia. Now they're just merely some peninsula at the rest of the Eurasia, which is unifying. And you can, today is another shocker for them. Azerbaijan is intended to join BRICS, which of course makes it much easier in terms of the North-South corridor, because Azerbaijan is a critical part of it between Russia and Iran and India. So we have Modi, we have the whole world is just basically, revolves around now BRICS. And then when Putin says that, well, we need to create parliament of BRICS, and Mr. Guterres, the big guy, G Secretary General of United Nations, is present, is basically telling him, dude, your time is up. So the United Nations is not needed practically the way it exists today. So yeah, it's the new structure of the security and economic structure of the world, not of some Eurasia. The world is emerging, and yeah, NATO is in panic. But again, the type of people who run this organization, they're either alcoholics like Borrell or completely some sociopath who are very incompetent. And there you go. That's the reaction.
Yeah, it was so amazing that they have invited Australia, New Zealand, South Korea, and Japan in order to send a message to China. And at the same time, we're hearing that there is a report that shows 40% of all semiconductors used for the weapons in the United States coming from China.
It's been there was a report about 5 years ago. Then they removed it, but it was declassified. It was also probably present. I remember it was the Congressional Research Service. I mean, the numbers for Chinese semiconductors in US defense industry just astonishing. It's like they decide to stop it, it's over, So yeah, it's well, I wrote 4 books on that, that this is not good what is going on in the West.
Yeah. How did you see the invitation of these four countries that are not part of NATO? In your opinion, what they want to do in terms of China and Russia, and what's the message that they want to send to China and Russia?
That's the whole thing. The only thing they can send is the message. They cannot do anything practical, So the message is, yeah, they can send, they can, dress themselves up in the, Dracula costumes, and, Halloween running around with those little basket asking for the candy. But that's about it. I mean, Borrell today, like, yeah, we have to go from 150,000 to 300,000, personnel in Europe. And it's like, sure, do it. What is going to change? Nothing. I mean, in order for them, for example, they obviously cover it up always with this fluffy rhetoric that Russians are about to invade Europe. Oh God, no. I mean, the Russians are building the wall now between Russia and Europe. But the point is that these people, as I already stated, and if you listen and look, watch my video today, I speak about it. You're talking about the people who do not even understand what they're talking about. And I mean it. It's not some kind of figure of speech or embellishment or exaggeration. It is. You cannot explain to them that, guys, everything you know about the world is pretty much bunk, most of it anyway. So, and Jacques is you speak to Jacques constantly, so Jacques Bo, and other people, they tell you that these guys, I mean, they lived in this parallel universe echo chamber, and they kind of, it's the same as applying Band-Aid to the fourth stage cancer, so that's going to be about the same effect. So that's the only thing they do, message. Well, yeah, we're strong, we're tough, Sure. Mr. Rybkov today, responding to those long-range weapons from Europeans, he said, "Well, it's fine. We're going to react." And he said, "We calmly will respond." Russia already has response, you know. So it's circus.
Well, you talk about these long-range missiles that they want to send to Germany, and do we understand why they want to do that? What's the reason behind this? Is just to intimidating Russia or anything else behind this?
Battle on children. The idea behind all this Germany, you know, deploying was what is called long-range hypersonic weapon. They decided to open it, you know, deploy it in 2022. They started to train, you know, personnel. They have now even trucks and even containers which can house it. But the problem is they don't have any hypersonic weapon. They're not going to have it for a long time. And they tried to launch it not from the container. Nobody knows how it went. They, oh yeah, look at this missile. We launch it. It's supposed to be a hypersonic weapon. They don't have hypersonic weapons, so this whole program is primarily PR, you know, and convincing people that yeah, we're doing something. Reality is the only thing they can bring in is, of course, this so-called Typhoon. Typhoon is nothing more than MK-41 vertical launch system, which you can find, for example, at the Aegis ashore installation in the Vesselu. But this time they get this container on their platform, such as truck, very large truck. And so they will stick there, guess what? Good old Tomahawks, okay? Clumps, there you go. That's their threat. Russians know. That's why Rybkov was very nonchalant about it. So it's like, yeah, they're running circles doing the same routine. It's which is definition of the insanity by Einstein, you know, trying doing the same thing and expecting the different outcome. It's all primarily PR, making those, you know, statements and things like that. So yeah, sure. Of course, let them.
Yeah, the problem is that we are not dealing with rational leaders, with logical leaders. During these 2 years, more than 2 years of this conflict, we know how they are. And the problem is right now they're talking about no-fly zone
Ukraine,
Ukraine.
no. Yeah, it's actually, I have to interrupt immediately. This is what Zelensky stated. Zelensky told Poland that Poland can shoot missiles if it wants to. There was no commitment from Poland. They actually scratched their head. This is the guy who makes, you know, those statements. That Poland is not going to shoot it down. So there is no-fly zone. So people misunderstood. Zelensky, as always, provided a truckload of the, you know, manure. And yeah, informational agencies, because as I already stated, manure people work in those manure agencies, they report this. So wishful thinking of Zelensky is not Polish policy, however crazy Poles are in you know in terms of their elites, they never committed to it. So it's Zelensky fantasies basically. That's what it is.
What do we know about the children's hospital in Kiev? And they wanted to put the blame on Russians.
Of
And
course, of course. Well, it was struck by the AIM-120 MRAM, which was beautifully documented on the photos by Ukrainian side, no less. And that's what you know struck hospital. And people do not understand that. And again, you have to understand, Western public is generally extremely ignorant on war, extremely ignorant on warfare and military technology. So if AIM-120, which is the main missile, it's actually air-to-air missile, which was created to be put on this NASAMS. Which is, you know, how to put it politely, it's Frankenstein, okay? It's not a very good air defense complex. And if, as they state, X-101, where it's almost half a ton of the explosives would hit this freaking, God forbids, you know, kindergarten, there would be nothing left there, you know, from this kindergarten. What you see there basically this missile, AIM-120 MRAM, losing guidance. When it was used against whatever, they were trying to intercept, and it's lost guidance and it struck the basically children's hospital. They hide. It's a NATO thing. They hide behind civilians. This is what the NATO militaries are good at. They hide their air defense complexes, whatever is left of them, primarily within the civilian areas, like kindergartens, apartment blocks. It was very well documented. So, there you go, and it happens. I mean, you should see how many those S-300 missiles from Ukrainian air defense complexes lost guidance and hit their own, environments in whatever the distance. So it's whatever the range. It was in Kyiv, it was elsewhere, very well documented. Anybody who wants to see what it is, they can dig into their archives, so to speak, all their past news, they will find it. So a lot of photos, very well documented.
Yeah, the other thing would be F-16s. Tony Blinken said that as we talk, he was talking at the NATO summit. He said that as we talk, you've sent F-16s to Ukraine. Do we know they have sent these fighter jets to Ukraine, or they would keep it in Romania, Poland, somewhere else outside Ukraine?
Well, anything what Blinken says is worthless. So yeah, he's a liar. He's a compulsive liar. He is sociopath. So he's not a normal person. Mentally, he is challenged dramatically. And the question is that if they want to fly those, as they say, fly over Ukraine, well, Russia has this wonderful, radar called Container. It covers, it's over the horizon, and it can see actually planes on the runways in Netherlands, for example. So it will know if it's go they're going to be launching them from airfields in Romania or Poland. In the moment they fly over Ukraine from those fields, those airfields will be attacked, and those people who have allowed that will be killed. So there you go, simple as that. Well, F-16 so obviously will be shut down too.
And if you were to mention the outcome of the NATO summit for Ukraine, what would be the outcome for Ukraine?
Just yet again, the carrot in the front of the jackass, basically. That's what it is. So, what can I say? I mean, the point is, even the carrot itself is the mock-up, papier-mâché, it's not even the real carrot. So, yeah, they kind of they run themselves in the corner due to their, as I already stated, the NATO cannot do strategy. They don't understand strategy. They don't understand warfare, for that matter. And so now they are trying desperately to present this, project this, solid, cohesive position against Russia. Sure, let them. I mean, they're becoming irrelevant with every day. And militarily, as I already stated, I do not by no means want to say that it cannot result in catastrophe. But militarily, they are not ready to fight modern war. My latest video today explains why. Especially when you look at the statistics about the officer corps, it's just wow. Yeah, that's children's game. Petulant children, they need to project something. Throw tantrums. That's pretty much what they do.
Yeah. Don't you think that this invitation of these four countries to the NATO summit is some sort of provocation for China? Because they did
Well,
the same in Ukraine with Russia. They're trying to prepare step by step, then preparing, inviting, the same kind of attitude as we've seen in Ukraine.
Well, most of the Pentagon plan, well, actually some do. They do not understand that obviously this is PR, okay? Let's put it this way. Let's be very clear on this issue. It is primarily PR, it is primarily to try to create this, air of the uncertainty, and that somebody drives the, war, and NATO wants war. again, let me put it this way. If NATO wants a real war, it will cease to exist within 30 minutes. All of it, you know, including the United States, which will be wiped off the map. And the problem with this is that the only thing they can do is provocation, okay? Most of it is done for PR. Most of it is done to, you know, win and stay elected. In Washington, it's a bunch of those bureaucrats who wants to stay elected and maintain their jobs. And those people understand only their cold, you know, steel barrel near their temple. And that's what Russia is doing now and explaining to them, you want to go that far, you will be killed. You know, your families, your property, everything. Fact is, Washington will be turned into the parking lot. But so they have to understand this, because being sociopath, they are everything but courageous people. They are cowards. And actually what they're doing right now is out of cowardice. United States Army cannot fight real war. It's so, and those people in Washington hide them behind civilians, you know, behind proxies. So, and we saw how it fights the wars in, as you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, how it all ends. Vietnam was a great, so killing civilians, yes. I mean, fighting the real enemy, which shoots back and shoots better than you, then that's totally different business. And so that is what the only motive and driver, which have to be presented to them, which is being presented, that we're gonna kill you. We're going to kill everything, you, everything what is dear. I'm not sure, though, if they have any, as Marjorie Taylor Greene stated, I applaud this woman. I may not agree with all of her positions, but I applaud her when she said, came out on Tucker like a few months ago, and she said, you think so that the average American senator will sell his family, you know, for the good fancy dinner in Washington, D.C.? She said, I can tell you more. It's much worse than that. So the only thing those people understand is fear. That's it is. They have to be scared, you know, crapless, basically. And they are being scared. And actually, the way they act, it's a classic, you know, all signs of the desperation, you know, and actually panic.
Yeah. Did you watch the Orban's interview with Bild? He was talking about the attitude of Russia and China. They're trying to make some sort of peace. At the same time, you see the United States together with European is the policy of war. It's a huge statement on his part. And he's part of the European Union. And when he talks this way, you feel how these European countries like Hungary, like Slovakia, they're feeling right now about the policy.
Hungary's future lies with BRICS. I think so. Orban understands that. And it's already actually with BRICS. When you look at the what China and Russia do economically in Hungary, in industrial sense, that's just building nuclear power stations, you know, building those, you know, processing plant. Chinese built huge industrial plant there. So, yeah, I mean, and Orban is a smart guy. He understands that he needs to maintain and keep this energy supply for Hungary, specifically for Hungary, you know. And as I already stated, a couple of years ago, I said that Hungary will become a very wealthy country because it could become this bridge. But the point is now, I underestimated their complete nut jobness of pretty much all of them in Brussels. So, and but Hungary, yeah, they have to look out, you know, for themselves. Absolutely. It's absolutely normal thing. The same goes for Slovakia. So what can I say? Yeah, European Union doesn't have future. Europe is done. It's over. For Europe as entity, as political and even ethnic and cultural entity, is over. It's done.
Is that possible that they're going to influence the Western Europeans who are totally in line with the United States? We know
that. No. He does it for the record. He's a smart guy. So he needs to leave this paper trail and saying, you brought this catastrophe while I was trying to find the solution. And that is important in this respect. And Russians and Chinese understand that. And he is greeted very warmly in Moscow and Beijing. So he's afforded, of course, the highest level, you know, meetings with Putin and Xi. And so, and he does this also for the historical record. You know, he is a politician, a big time politician, you know. So obviously in history of Hungary, especially when things are said and done, and if he returns those Hungarian enclave in Western Ukraine to Hungary, he knows he will be enshrined and written in Hungary's history as one of the greatest Hungarian statesmen. So he does it also for Hungary and himself. So, and I think so he's doing the right thing, you know. But if it somehow influences, sure, it's a good byproduct, but I think so he's a very tough realist. And but you know, he probably also went to Moscow, say, hey, we are not there, we are different. Moscow knows it.
And when you look at the what's going on right now in Belarus, we have a right now we have a joint Belarusian Chinese exercises taking place. Have Chinese started to get prepared for any sort of conflict in Taiwan?
Well, it's two-pronged, correct. China is preparing for this contingency with Taiwan. We can assume with a high degree of probability that actually there are, well, let's put it this way, rumor has it that Chinese are present in operational planning and even tactical level formations in special military operations zone. So I would expect the Chinese are taking part, learning, you know, and obviously there are a number of Chinese listeners, the officers in the Academy of the General Staff, for example. So they're learning. So in preparation to, because they need to harmonize and you know refine the military interaction between Russia and China, and who knows what else? I mean, whatever Russia will provide in terms of weapon systems to Chinese. So, but yeah, and then of course, yeah, Belarus, it's in the union state with Russia. They are essentially having the harmonized defensive doctrines. So, and it's absolutely normal for Chinese to send some unit, I don't know how many, probably, you know, company size unit or something like that, to do this drills and special operations and things of this nature. So it's normal. There's absolutely nothing super duper special about it. One Russians and Chinese do joint exercises, such as like Vostok 2018. That's the big deal. Okay, so but yeah, this is normal. So yeah, it's absolutely normal routine situation.
Andre, don't you think that in that visit of Putin to
Yeah,
China, they
yeah.
talk about the Putin's visit of North Korea right now, the China's presence in Belarus?
Yeah, it's definitely you can bet that Putin called Xi before going to North Korea. It wasn't something, you know, he said, I'm going, this is what's going to happen. Obviously, China has its her own opinion about this. They do not have easy relationship with North Korea, but you have to understand that Russia is the power right now, which goes completely on its own. Russia doesn't care who says what, or you know, Russia went to North Korea, broke the economic, you know, economic blockade. That is why Kim was basically shining, you know, what he was saying by to it's a humanitarian part, but of course it's also a military strategic part. And so it's all harmonized in some respect, in some level. So it's nothing, you know, which is out of the blue. A lot of things have been discussed and planned by people like Putin and Xi. You know, these are big politicians. These are global powers, Russia and China. And they do as they deem necessary. When they are together, I mean, the rest of the world is just, it's nothing, you know, compared to their power. So, yeah, that is pretty much what is happening right now. But then, of course, we shouldn't forget Mr. Modi. It's like, my God.
Yeah, that hog, unbelievable.
It's oh my God, it's just, yeah, Russia is so isolated, and you know, United States is the leader of the free world. I mean, it's laughable.
And if they, I think China and Russia right now, they totally understand what's at stake for them and how important this partnership is becoming for the future of BRICS and the SCO. And because anything happening between Russia and China would be the end of BRICS.
Well, yeah, well, absolutely. There is a clear understanding of it. But more than that, there is a clear understanding on part of India. That is why they're trying to now settle things with China, between India and China, with this, you know, everlasting conflict, you know. In so it's, yeah, it's an important thing. It's not easy. You have gigantic countries with gigantic economies, you know, and China is not just gigantic, it's monstrous economy, okay? So you move around these big players, okay? So it's not easy, but you have to do it. And as I already stated, superpowers, they move in a completely different universe, so to speak. They think differently. They assess themselves differently. So the United States failed to do so, and look where it all brought it to, you know. So, and yeah, there is an understanding that, you know, the new world order is based primarily on China and Russia.
Yeah. Just opening the door to North Korea, what would that have? That would be unbelievable.
It will be. North Korea will become BRICS member at some point of time. Again, Kim, he was just, you know, radiating joy, okay, when Putin was leaving, because I can only imagine what they negotiated. But again, as any political regime or system, it lasts only as long as people are happy, you know. And people are happy primarily when the economics allows them to be happy. And breaking the blockade, economic sanctions on North Korea, it means a world, because people will live better. They will eat better. They will have more income, you know. So it's like this is completely total turnaround for North Korea.
And the Orban, in his report that the Spanish newspaper El País reported, that he's talking about Orban in his visit to China and Russia. He came to a conclusion that Putin and Xi, they're believing that by the end of this year, we're going to have some sort of negotiations. And do you think that, in their opinion, or Putin just, he's thinking of putting an end to this conflict by the end of this year?
No, it's not like that. You have to understand that when politicians talk, it's always sometimes double, if not triple meaning. For example, I'll give you an example. So, yeah, we're going to have negotiations by the end of this year. What does it mean? Well, it doesn't mean that the remnants of the armed forces of Ukraine will be annihilated. And, yeah, you will have Russia dictating conditions of this deal, period. That's it. This is how it all has to be. Always follow Mr. Medvedev, not Mr. Putin. Medvedev is alter ego, and he is too big of a person to be ignored. He is a political heavyweight, former Russian president, and second man after Putin in Russian state. Many people do not understand who Mr. Medvedev is. He is deputy chair of the Security Council of Russia. The chair of the Security Council of Russia is, of course, Mr. Putin. So, and he is the top Security Council of Russia, is the main political organ which literally runs country, which decides its political, military, whatever, geopolitical future. The rest is goes down to State Duma, you know, those laws and things like that. But if you look attentively who sits on the Security Council, you immediately understand that's the kind of guys who run the country. You know, and it's, don't forget, Russia is a very strong presidential republic, which is actually a blessing, at least at this stage, you know. So, and that's what really matters. And yes, when you look at this, when they say things, Mr. Medvedev actually says it all. And the way he says it, oh my God, they have to pray in Washington that he doesn't become their president, which he probably will after Putin retires. And that's going to be really bad news for combined West, if anything remains of it, you know, in to be considered seriously.
How did you find this concept? There is an article about Japan's tacit NATO membership acts as bridge for the global security. They're talking about Japan being part of NATO. And is that why would Japan be part of NATO? What's the concept behind this? How is it going to contribute to the global security?
Well, Japan already was part of the military bloc. I mean, what about the name? I forgot. You know, I'm getting old. Seattle, Sent, whatever. So there was Anzac, Anzus. You know, it's just kind of all. United States knows how to build blocks. It doesn't mean that they're very good militarily. Fact is, most of the time they suck. You know, but it's all about this political thing, and we have this bloc and all that. Japan is is occupied nation. They are brainwashed, and so they will do as United States tells them. You know, they will say United States will tell them jump. They will ask how high. But there are some issues, economic issues for Japan, and while they're definitely a very advanced economy, and militarily they are some power. But once if it goes to a really big game, okay, Japan could be really switched off really fast. You know. From this game, not least because China is nuclear power, Japan is not, and so it's a complex game there. But yeah, NATO sure, as if you know, Japan was always part of the Western bloc. You know, its military was always kind of incorporated into it. You know, so it's all game. You know, words, play of the words and things like that. So it's purely NATO West dependent country.
The problem is that they're talking about these countries at the same time. We know that NATO is sinking because of Turkey, that the way that Turkey is behaving right now, they're not totally in for NATO.
If Erdogan is probably going to be recorded in the history of the master of the geopolitical equilibristics, it's a trapeze act, you know, what he does every day. It's like you look at it, that the dude manages to sit on like four or five chairs simultaneously. You have to admit how he does it. I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, it's just incredible. So, but yeah, Turkey's future. As already stated, it's clear economic future with BRICS. It's not with, well, for now, they have obviously some benefits of being, you know, economically tied to Europe, but yeah, it's future in BRICS. And Erdogan probably understands. And again, listen, look attentively at what Russians account for, I believe, one third of the tourist industry in Turkey. From what I heard recently, one third. Okay, so these are Russians, and yeah, you go on the you know, Antalya, you know, shores or whatever, Trabzon, and there are more Russian-speaking people than probably Turkish people, you know, and the signs there on the old restaurants are in Russian too, you know, so it's important. Turkey is very important for the whole thing, and again, this is the largest and most capable, I would say, army in NATO after American one, and so what can I say? Yeah, they will end up in BRICS. It's their destiny. Nothing could be done about it. It's like, you know, it's like the clockwork. No matter how you turn, until you wound it correctly, you know, and wind it correctly, and it begins to tick properly. Turkey is obviously they will never be allowed to EU. Everybody knows that, you know. So, but now, I mean, who would want to be in EU? You know, this is Sodom and Gomorrah, and yeah, it's pretty much over.
Do we know right now what would be the official policy of NATO in Ukraine? Are they trying to intensify sending weapons to Ukraine, or they're just in the process of reducing the weapons to Ukraine?
They cannot send much without going completely defenseless. So that's the demilitarization of NATO. United States, people, generals, you know, joint chiefs of staff people, you know, they come out and say, we don't have anything left. You know, we are down to literally bottom, you know, on some weapon systems. Other weapon systems are so bad that even the Wall Street Journal admits that most of high precision weapons from United States suck. Because they're jammed by Russians and they're simply not designed for the modern battlefield. And So yeah, it's a dilemma, it's a conundrum. And what can they say? Well, they will send some more something, you know. They might send more attack missiles, for example. I don't know, 20, 30. They might send more HIMARS. That's about it. They already sustained catastrophic reputational damage. If they want more Abrams tanks or Leopard tanks, sure. British understood, got the message really fast. They withdrew all Challengers and forbid to use them at the front line. Because can you imagine the cultural shock in Britain when they were just being BS'd for decades that, oh yeah, this is the best tank in the world, and then bang, one after another, they just burn, and Russians say, bring more. Because you know they want to, it's a good money. Leopard, I mean, the reputation of German armor was utterly destroyed. So, and Abrams, you saw yourself what is happening. It's so they want to see the shutdown F-16, probably with the pilot, you know, stick to it, you know, inside and being paraded in Moscow. Sure, no problems, you know. I probably, yeah, there's a Russian air defense and Russian air force fighting each other. Who gonna be the first to shoot down? Hey, it's 20 million rubles, you know, it's pretty good money. Actually, it's damn good money, you know, for the first F-16. So, yeah, good luck. Whatever they can send now. F-35, Russians will die probably laughing when that thing flies in. So it just, yeah, it's over, you know, that's the world saw it. That's what people don't understand. Global South saw it all. They're not stupid there in Africa or in South America. They saw it all. They understood the message. Unlike this, you know, cretins, which, you know, in Washington, who were drinking this, you know, Kiev propaganda Kool-Aid. This guy somewhere in, yeah, like in Brazil or like, you know, in South Africa or Kenya or wherever in Arab countries, they were looking at this. They were kind of having their pen and paper and writing down the score. They are not idiots. Indians know also what is this all about. Chinese, of course, they know what is going on. So there you go. You do not go out and present yourself as a clown, which you are, while you're trying to present yourself that you are such a, you know, big macho, you know. So, and there you go. This is what all it ended up with. And when I talk about it, I spoke about it for now second decade. Reputation, you can build, to build reputation, it takes so much effort and decades. Okay? Including propaganda, of course. Now, guess what? You can lose your reputation really fast. And this is exactly what happened. As Mr. Semyonov, first deputy commander of the Russian Aerospace Forces, came out and said a few days ago, PAC-3, Patriot PAC-3, it cannot defend itself, let alone defend anything else. So they're just not designed to fight real war, you know. And result was a catastrophe, a reputational catastrophe. So if they want to see it, send, let them send F-15s, you know, or whatever, they will be shut down.
As much as we are witnessing the signs of escalation in Ukraine, on the other hand, we see signs of some sort of sanity. Zelensky was talking about negotiations, having a second peace summit, having Russians participating in that summit. And he said that he's prepared to agree on these regions that are already in the hand of Russians to be part of. It seems that he was mentioning that. And
Oh my
no.
God. No. I mean, he can say whatever he wants, but the point is, the only thing West understands at this point is pain. You just grab their gonads, put them in the vise, and begin to kind of, you know, rotate the lever. And that's the only thing they understand. And the fact that the change of tune from Zelensky, yeah, he's a Muppet. He may be allowed to say something, but as already Russians are just repeated nonstop, the negotiations, or rather setting the conditions of surrender, will be between Washington and Moscow, period. Nobody else. Ukraine is just, you know, like sideshow. Big show, but sideshow nonetheless. It is all about how United States and NATO will fade into, you know, into darkness, if you wish. You know, and especially considering the real situation here in the United States, it's not good. Okay, let me put it this way. I live here. I cannot recognize the country which used to be, you know. So it's really bad. It's going to get much worse. For Europe, it's going to be order of magnitude worse than it is for the United States. So Russians know this. They're not in a rush. They want to see the whole damn system collapse on itself now, and it will.
Yeah. And the other sign was the Stoltenberg was talking about, and we have to provide Ukraine with weapons in order to improve their position in to negotiate with mm-hmm. Russians. Do you think that it's logical to send more weapons?
Well, it's a mantra. It's a trope. They need to repeat it. Stoltenberg is the certified idiot. He ran the country the size of one of the boroughs of Moscow, Norway. I mean, not geographically, and it's a beautiful country and it's large geographically, but in terms of population, and Moscow outproduces Norway, you know, in terms of real GDP and things of this nature. So that's his level. In Brussels, being the chair of NATO, Secretary General of NATO, it's a political job. It's a job of the parrot. And how they, you know, what kind of prod they use up his butt, you know, from Washington to say what is needed. He is nobody. He is actually less than a zero. Quoting Mr. Schwarzenegger from The Running Man, was a zero, you know, so now less than a zero. So that's what it is. He is a parrot. He's nobody. And so most of those, you know, idiots running around with, you know, those sociology and economics background, they don't know first thing about anything, what is happening right now, militarily, strategically, and operationally. They do not understand this. So there you go. So he runs there, you know, spews this BS, the same as like this idiot von der Leyen. And yeah, that's the type of people who are in charge of this whole thing.
Andre, when you look at the SCO right now, the question would be, can the SCO become the basis for building a new security architecture in Eurasia? How do you see this concept?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the foundation of it. And again, look at what how Russia and China go about it. And again, don't forget, there were already two major, colossal exercises, maneuvers. So when the next maneuvers are held, which they probably will be at some point of time, especially once it kind of winds down in terms of their outright hostilities in Ukraine, we will have to see how they want to integrate the whole thing, but they will be, and they are already integrating this whole thing, you know, military command and control and things like that, since, you know, probably 2010, you know, but it really got the boost once Xi became the, you know, chairman and, you know, premier. So yeah, it will be, again, of course, Russia and China driving this, but nobody says that India cannot join it. And Russia will be providing the, for example, in terms of air defense systems, Russia is the kind of like, you know, go-to country. They will be getting it. They're already getting it. So, and India even went back a year ago. They said, we will be the first country which will get S-500. No less. Okay, and I don't think so. They were bluffing. I'm pretty sure they were discussing this issue with Moscow. And so, yeah, you will have this kind of spread of the military technologies unified. At some point of time, that will be unified air defense system, maybe, you know. So as it already was the air defense system of CIA's, you know, community of the independent states. So, yeah, I totally can see that happening.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this session, Andre, when we look at BRICS, when we look at the SCO, we see countries that having differences. China, India, Iran, Saudi Arabia, but they are learning, they are practicing some sort of wisdom, new kind of policy for a greater good. At the same time, we're witnessing the totally different manner in the European Union in G7. They don't, I don't know if you saw the Finland was talking about Orban. They're just ignoring Orban. They're just saying he doesn't, he can't do anything. It seems that they have to be totally in line with them in order to be in a, to be accepted into alliance.
As I already stated, Western Europe is done. It's over for them as nations. I don't think so France will exist as France as we know in 20 years. But if you want to see a new dawn, so to speak, look at Turkey, who is ready to work with Syrian government, with the government of Bashar al-Assad, who was their kind of worst enemy just 5 years ago. Look at it now. They say, yeah, we accept the government in Damascus. We want to resolve our differences. We want to talk. We want to recognize it. And there you go. That's Turks. Who would ever thought? But here we are. You know, so things happening.